The interview that you're about to hear is one of those interviews that really the only the Holy Spirit can put together. I was actually on my Facebook page, and as I was scrolling through one day, I see a picture of a 12-year-old boy next to a grizzly bear that he had hunted with a bow and arrow. And one of my Facebook friends says, this young man has just hunted or harvested his first bear. And God is doing great things with this ministry called Kicking Bear. And I had never seen anything like that. I had never heard of a ministry that had anything to do with hunting before. I'm not a hunter. I've never been hunting in my life, to be honest. And so I wrote my friend and I said, hey, what is going on? What is this ministry? What is this all about? And so he said, well, I happen to be going hunting with the founder and director of Kicking Bear this afternoon. And I told him, well, I do these interviews. Do you think that he would be interested in doing an interview just to tell us about this ministry, about what it is that he does, and about this ministry called Kicking Bear? It's such an odd name. It's a I had never seen a boy with a bear before. It was just such an interesting thing. And so, praise the Lord, Ray, the man that you're about to see this interview with, the founder and director of this ministry, he was on board. He was willing to do this interview with me. And so I jumped on with him just a couple of days later, and we did this interview. And I'll tell you what, the testimony of Ray and the journey that God has brought him on is one of the most incredible journeys I have ever heard in my life. And I know that you're going to be really encouraged by this. It's going to be, for me, there were some things that Ray said that were just life-changing for me that really had an impact in my heart. And so I'm really excited for you to hear this. I hope that you enjoy it. Also, just want to thank you for listening to the Revival Carriers podcast. And just want to ask that if you haven't already, that you would subscribe on your Apple iTunes podcast or YouTube or whatever it is that you're watching or listening this on. And share this with your friends. Help me get the word out. This podcast is growing, and it's really wonderful. Some of the feedback that I've gotten back there, I have gotten more feedback from this podcast than any other endeavor similar to this that I have done in media or anything like that. And so it's really a blessing for me. I really appreciate it whenever you guys write in and you let me know how God is touching you and how God is encouraging you through this podcast. And it's an honor for me to be a part of it. And so I'm not going to go on much longer than this. I want to let you just be able to jump in and listen to what Ray has to say, because I'm telling you guys, it is absolutely awesome. Oh, also on Apple Podcasts, if you could do me a favor, please. And if you could leave me those recommendations where you go on and you give 5 stars and they say, yeah, this podcast is great. You write a little thing on there. If you've been listening for a while and you haven't done that yet, please do so, because it really helps this podcast grow and get out there. And it's really important for us to be able to keep getting this out and encouraging more people. And that just helps us out, because right now I think we have 2 5-stars on there, even though there are quite a bit of people listening now. And so I just really appreciate it. So thank you guys. Enjoy this interview. I know that it's going to be a huge blessing for you.
Hi, Ray.
How are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. I hear you.
Good. Let me do one thing here.
Sure, absolutely.
And you are Alan?
Yes, sir.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been kind of a crazy day already, but other than that, we're doing good.
Yeah, were you speaking at a church or something this morning?
No, I actually just got to go to a church this morning and be a part of the church instead of speaking. Last night we had a prayer session that was pretty unique, and I was a part of that, and got to listen to some other pastors speak, and then I had the opportunity to talk a little bit about Kicking Bear and then pray for the military, and it was a pretty upbeat event last night. So,
wow. So was it unique because it was focused on the military, like a military event?
No, it was a little everything. It was just people praying for this earth and this world right now. And the military was one part of it. And each one of the pastors had a part in something that we were praying for. And so my part was the military part of it.
Wow. So I actually just, I finished this morning before I went to church. I watched your testimony video on the Kicking Bear website, and man, that made me cry, man. Your testimony is so powerful. It's just amazing what I was sitting there as I was listening to it and watching the video. I was thinking, man, it's like God hand built you for the ministry that you do. It's amazing. Can you, would you mind sharing your testimony just for the listeners as well?
Oh, I'd be happy to, yeah. You know, what's interesting about what you just said, I don't know how else to put it, because at the right time when I gave my heart to the Lord and he showed me all the rest I was doing was distractions, you know, everything that I had done to that point, from the time I was 5 years old, came into play with what we were doing with Kicking Bear. And, you know, that, as I was doing Kicking Bear and going forward, the more I realized everything I did since I was a kid was like going to a college and learning it. You cannot, that was one thing about the military part of it too. You really can't talk about a veteran and where he's been at or where he's at right now unless you've been at where he's at. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of things going on in my life when I was a kid that were really upside down, but if I had not gone through them, I wouldn't know how to push the enemy out of the other kids' lives. So, and what you said is very, very true. I believe that all those things happen for a purpose. And as it sits right now, the gift God gave me in marriage with Karen, he's paid me back 10,000 times over what went on when I was younger. And, you know, in my testimony, I only tell parts of things, otherwise it would go on for a long time.
Yeah.
But, I kind of kid around with my wife about that, because I told her, you know, Karen, when I was sitting in jail at 13 years old, if I'd have known God had you planned for me, I would have been the happiest kid in the world. And you think about that, you know, and that would be the truth of it. I don't know at that point that I would have really known what I had, but I would have really known that, gosh, God's really got something nice for me waiting. So, yeah. Anyway.
Wow. Yeah. Man, whenever I was listening just about your grandfather and how, you know, how old were you? You were so young whenever your father left. And that I really connected with that, because I was looking at the statistics on your website. You talked about how 43% of people, is that in America or worldwide, 43% of family children are fatherless?
That's in America.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I'm sure. I lived in Panama for the past 13 years. I've been here in the States for a couple of years with our ministry. Before that, I lived in Panama, and then I was in Turkey and different places. But definitely the level of fatherlessness that there is just everywhere. And I know I related so much to your story as well, because I've spoken to my biological father once in my life. I've never actually met him face to face. And he left whenever I was one. My mom remarried. And so technically my stepfather, he's the one who raised me. And if he hadn't come into the picture, I would have had a really, I already dealt with so much rejection and so much hate for my biological father and all that. So I really just connected with your story. I thought it was so powerful.
Was your stepfather, was he a believer then, Alan?
Yeah, he became a believer whenever he met my mom.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so
that's what happened to me when I met Karen. Yeah. He freaked me right off.
Yeah, I know. I was listening. It was so funny listening to your testimony about how your wife was talking to somebody, and you asked them what they were talking about, and they said they were talking about your salvation. And yeah. I just laughed at that, because I love how in the kingdom of God, people, well, not everywhere, but in the kingdom of God, whenever people just speak truth, how it really can impact you so much.
Yeah. Well, those things happen, and they were real. I was pretty earthly minded back then about making a lot of money and doing all the things I was doing. And got some vulture talking to your wife. Boy, it was pretty real for me back then. I didn't know there was men. I did not know that there was real men of God back then. I did not know that there was men that were sold off to Christ. And they looked at women as their sisters instead of something that they wanted. I didn't know that. I know it now. So,
wow.
You know, what's really interesting, too, as I talk to women now, as I've gotten older and when I gave my heart to the Lord, there were still different things that were going on where somebody would approach you and talk to me and stuff. First thing comes out of my mouth now is I call her, hey, how you doing, sis? Before it even starts. And that's been kind of, and I'm nothing special, but I'll tell you what, the devil has got so many fishing lures, and he's got all different colors and all different sizes, and he's just waiting for the right one for you to grab. And I'm just doing my best to protect myself everywhere I go. And I don't drink no more. I don't do nothing. I stay in the scriptures every day, and I'm in the scriptures with my wife, because the attacks, they don't stop. And you know, it's kind of, I don't know how to put this, you know, I will tell you, the toughest men I know love the Lord, bar none. They've drawn that line, they follow Christ. And what is interesting about that, as a disciple, and you've made that decision, you got the shortest job description, be a disciple to make disciples. But I'm going to tell you something, being a disciple is the toughest job you will ever have. There's great joy in it. In victory in Christ. But boy, the stuff that comes after you in Mark, it tells about the persecution and all the lies. Man, I'll tell you what, you just, all that stuff is real. And if we didn't have the word, sometimes I don't know what I'd do. I kind of want to get human on people sometimes. But yeah, I had one guy came at me and persecuted me for 9 years. And if you ever met this guy, that's the opponent. If you wanted the best of the best, I'll match you. That's the guy. He was mean. And he just kept at it because he didn't get something that he wanted at one time. And finally, one day he walked by me with his camera people, and he gave me the dirtiest look, like he was going to throw something at me or hit me. And I walked up behind him when he kept walking. I tapped on his shoulder. He turned around. His eyeballs got real big. And I said to him, I said, Rob, I want you to know that you're my brother, and I forgive you, and I've been praying for you for all the things that you've done against me. And man, that guy backed up, and he looked at me. And he didn't turn around and walk away. It's like he stomped his feet or something. And I thought, well, Ray, that was the dumbest thing you ever did. But you know, a half hour later, he sent me a message, wanted to meet with me. I sat down with him, and he shared with me everything that had gone on in his life and the rejection that had gone on in his life, which I became a part of that when he didn't get what he wanted. And then I was able to share the gospel with him sitting there. And then I kept, every week I would send him different messages on scripture. I didn't know if he was really going to take a hold or not. And about 6 months later, he gave his heart to the Lord. And this guy here, who was about the meanest, worst character I ever met in my life, he said to me one day, he said, Ray, he said, do you think I could come to a kicking bear camp and help out? I said, Rob, you're more than welcome. I said, love to have it. And so he shows up to the camp. What do I got to do? What can I do? And I said, well, just stick with me and we'll get everything done and get things rolling. And we were getting things ready to go, and the event was starting and stuff. And a lady walked up to me with two of her children. And she said, Ray, I heard you're going to have baptism tomorrow. We'd like to get baptized. And I said, yeah. I said, I'll interview you beforehand. And I said, if you want to be a part of the baptisms, I'd love to have you. And Rob is sitting there with this blank look on his face. And Alan, he looks at me and he says, Ray, do you think I could get that baptized tomorrow?
Wow.
I'm going to tell you something. I would have bet I would have won any lottery in the world before that man would ever said those words to me. And I was in tears. I said, Rob, I said, if you would like to get baptized tomorrow, I said, I'd love to be in the pond with you. And I didn't know for sure if he was going to. I mean, and the next day, he was there, and, well, I just couldn't, I'm crying like a baby. I just could not believe what God had done. I couldn't believe it. And you know something, Alan? At that point, if I walked up behind him, tapped him on the shoulder, and slapped him in the face for the stuff he did, I never had the opportunity to share the gospel with him. And I think that in itself is probably one of the most impactful lessons I've ever had as being a believer.
Wow.
So, yeah, if he was writing letters to people and doing things that were just crazy, that meant nothing, it was just garbage that he was coming up with just because he didn't get some earthly thing. And I actually didn't have anything to do with it. I was the guy in the middle.
Wow.
So, anyway, I just tell you, just as I'm growing and in this journey and the everyday path, there's something new all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And I just, I feel so blessed that I've given my heart to the Lord and I know where I'm going. I do know how this all ends. And the fact of the matter is in these days and time, Alan, you being in Turkey and some of these other places, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine it. Right here in the United States, this is happening here. And, you know, just going to keep doing my absolute best to keep sharing the gospel and doing what we need to do until God takes us home. I don't know how long we got here or when all things are going to end, but, yeah. You know, God's promised us heaven, which is a much more wonderful place to be than right here. But man,
that's right.
Get out of here and go. You got a job to do here. So,
yeah. And I've been just looking at your website and talking to speaking with Chad as well. It just the things that you're doing are the amount of people that you're able to minister to all these kids is just so, it's so wonderful. And could you just tell me your journey of how you got from being a child who, like you said, you were in jail whenever you were so young, and then going from a teenager in jail and the childhood that you had that was so rough, the farm that you were on, all those things, to now for 21 years, I think it is now, that you've been leading this Kicking Bear ministry where you're reaching thousands of youth and kids for Jesus. How did that happen?
Well, I guess I'm going to start with my testimony and what did happen, because I don't know how else to explain it. And if God's given me anything to share in this world, it is a testimony of truth. And, you know, when I was young, 5 years old, you know, I had really a wonderful mom and a dad who we looked up to him. And, you know, mom was great, but there was something special about dad. Whenever dad came home from work every day, we'd be standing at the window waiting for him to pull in the driveway. As soon as he'd get to the door, man, we were tackling him and he was throwing us around and we were having fun, you know, and he's dragging us across the floor. There was a lot of memories of this is dad, this is fun. And on weekends when he didn't have to work, we got to have him. I mean, we got to go out and goof around with dad, and there was a lot of different things we did. But I guess the part of dad being a hero came when we went four-wheeling with him with this old jalopy, and we were bouncing around in the back of the woods out in the middle of nowhere, and dad got this truck stuck in a pile of mud that, I mean, I'm not kidding you, the wheels were down, and the mud was all the way up, and the tires are spinning, and we're standing up, and I'm a little scared. I mean, how are we going to get home to mom, you know? And, you know, there was uncertainty there, and, you know, my dad became the hero. I mean, he got us home. Everything was back to normal, you know, so at that age, life was joyful. I didn't know any different. It was fun. This is cool. And one day, my mom and dad were talking in the hallway, and I came around to see them guys, and I heard my dad say to my mom something that I knew he was serious about. And he said to her, "I am leaving." And those words, I can still feel them in my heart. And when he said that, I knew he was telling the truth, just the look on his face. And I thought, well, there's no way my dad's going to leave without me. I ran out the front door and hid into the back seat of the car. And I went up as far as you could in the back seat so nobody could see me there, because I'm going with my dad. You know, it wasn't very long, and that back door opened up, and I heard him say, "Here he is." And they grabbed me by the feet, and they're pulling me out of the car, and I'm hanging on to everything to stay in that car. And, you know, they got me on the ground, and I'm screaming and yelling, "Dad, don't go, Dad, don't go." And my dad now seems like a whole different person. He is not the fun guy that I always had fun with. It's almost like he didn't know me. He gets in the car, and the car pulls out of the driveway and goes down the road. And, what a horrible thing to have go on. I was pretty emotional. I still didn't know really what happened. And, you know, day after day, standing at the window with my brother and sister waiting for my dad came home was a nightmare. And this storm that we had was like a dark fog that came over our family. There was no laughter. My mom, too, she was not the same. And she was on the phone talking quite a bit. And all there was bills and all kinds of other things that were coming and things that were happening. I really didn't understand that time. But a while later on, the doorbell rang. I'm in the house. I go up to the door and open up the door. I look up, and here's this big, tall guy standing there, and a shorter lady. He's looking at me with a big smile on his face. He says, "You're Raymond." He says, "I'm your grandpa Over." And I'm looking at him, "Who's this guy?" And then she says, "I'm your grandma." And my mom comes to the door, and in they come. And no kidding, this is my grandma and my grandpa, who I'd never met, my mom's parents. And we get talking. He's happy. And we're talking, and a little while later, he says, "Well, and your grandma came here to get you guys. We're going to take you back home with us. You're going to be living with us for a while." And really? So we packed up everything, and my grandpa took us from Flint, Michigan to La Crosse, Wisconsin, and we moved in with him. And my grandpa, he was awesome. He became my daddy. He became somebody I looked up to, and if I had things go upside down, he was the guy to talk to. If I was a guy that got in trouble for doing something wrong, he's the guy I didn't want to see. But, yeah, he was awesome. And, I remember he went and got me my first bicycle. And he also got my brother and sister's bicycles. And I got to go fishing, and I got to do a lot of things. I was doing things at school that were pretty normal. I was in with the rest of the kids. And around the age of 12 years old, I could see my grandpa was sick. But I didn't realize how sick he was. You know, at a young age, too, yet, you really don't know what sickness is or really what death is. And so my grandpa's this big, tough guy, and he's getting sicker and sicker. And one day, grandma and mom sat me down with my brother and sister, and they said, "Grandpa's really sick. He's got this thing called crawling stomach cancer." But what is that? And they were talking about it and stuff, and I said, "Well, my grandpa will get better. I mean, he'll get better." But you know what ended up happening, Alan? He was in bed more and more, and next thing you know, they took him to the hospital. And I kind of felt good about him going to the hospital because, you know, everybody goes to the hospital, gets fixed up, and they come home. That's all I thought about. And I thought, well, we're going to get grandpa fixed up, and then he can come home. And I would go to his room after school, and I would visit grandpa and talk to him and stuff. And, you know, he didn't seem like he was getting much better, but I loved him very much. And the one day I went to the hospital, they wouldn't let me in the room. And there were strange things that were being said when I was on the floor right there. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. Well, I didn't know it. They didn't want to tell me, but my grandpa had passed away. You know, for the second time in my life, a man that I loved very much is gone. And my grandpa, I mean, this dark cloud came over our family now. Now my mom and my grandma were confused. They didn't, there was things coming up now that this leader of the family is gone, and they're taking care of it. So the focus on the kids now is very little. You guys get to school and get back home, and this is, and it wasn't, I don't know how to explain that. It was almost like there was really something missing. And for me, as a young man, I'd go to school, and the older I got, I mean, there was bullies at school. I wasn't the best basketball player, and I wasn't the best wrestler. I think I liked fishing more than I liked anything, but man, I was getting picked on, and twice, I got taken out back to school, and I got the ever-living daylight beat out of me. Even to the point that One time they stuck me with a metal compass in my hip, and when they stuck me with that compass, I developed blood poisoning from it,
Wow.
and it went from my hip into my shoulder. I ended up in the hospital, and I had such a fear of going to school because of what was going on. This is real. Next thing you know, I get back to school. I started hanging around with other kids that had the same problems. They were the kids that were standing on the corner smoking cigarettes and they were staying away from other people. I started hanging around with more or less to protect myself from these guys that are bullying me. Well, one thing leads to another. These kids, they weren't bad kids, but they were involved with things that I never knew nothing about. You know, next thing you know, you're out drinking and you're partying and there's girls, and at 13 years old, you're driving cars down the back roads and having fun. I mean, you're doing all kinds of stuff. And then I didn't have to go home if I didn't want to. We had a tent out on the sandbar. If I wanted to stay on the sandbar and party all night, that's what I did. Well, I started skipping school and I really didn't care about it. I wasn't around the bullies anymore. I didn't have anybody tell me what I could do or what I couldn't do. I had a freedom that was right there in front of me. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was on a very bad path. All those fun and games were going to get worse and worse, and it was going to consume me at some point. So I would go home to see my mom and my grandma once in a while, say hi to them about what started to happen. So I went home to see my mom one day, and I was actually living on a sand beach with my friends. And I come home to see my mom, and there were some strange people in the house. This one guy was very tall and really intimidating. And I walked in the door. He says, "You're Raymond? Yeah. Sit down." He points at a chair and tells me to sit down. I think, who's this character? And I sit down in the chair. And they open up, Ray, you and your brothers and sisters are out of control. Your mom and grandma can't control you. So we found new homes for you, and we're going to take you to those homes. And you know something? At that point, I lost my freedom. I really didn't know what was going on. And just like that, I mean, they packed us up and put us in two different cars. My brother and sister went in one car, and I went in the other car, and down the road we went. I think because I was the older boy, it was going to teach me a lesson. And I needed to be more disciplined, maybe, because I was involved in drinking and carrying on, so on and so forth. I will tell you this, too, though. I look back on it, you know, things could have been a lot worse. And I think God protected me from doing some things that would have been to that point. But I was there. I mean, I could have done it. And anyway, they take me to this home out in the country, and it's a farm. There's five other boys on that farm. Every morning we got up, we did chores, we milked cows. I went to school smelling like a cow, and I came home and did chores every day. There was no hunting. There was no fishing. There was no getting out and doing things with other people. It was go to school, come back home, and do chores. And it, you know, the people that I was living with, they really didn't care about me. There was no talking. There was no nothing. You get out and get your work done. That's kind of how it was. I liked the work. I mean, it was pretty cool. I'm doing the milking the cows and the haying and the thrashing and all that stuff was pretty cool. I think if I would have had somebody that really cared about Ray Hall, I think I would have probably stayed there. But I hated my life so much. It was like being in a prison without bars and without barbed wire on the wall. Out of it. It really wasn't my fault. I just didn't have the dad. I didn't realize all that at the time. But so one day the school bus pulls up to the school. Everybody gets off the bus and goes in them doors. And they got up and went in the doors. I took a left turn and went the other way. I went out by the highway and I hitchhiked and got a ride and went back by my friends that were down on the beach down there. And everybody was fishing and partying. And I went back to being free and being normal. And everything was going along pretty good. About a week went by, and the police caught me. They put me in a squad car, and they took me to jail. And for truancy, they gave you 3 days off of school. Well, my truancy was going to be spent in jail. They were going to teach me a lesson not to run away from that home. But, you know, when you get to a certain mindset, and nobody cares about you, and you're imprisoned in a life you can't get out of, you get a hatred in you that you don't want to live this life. And I'll tell you something. Every time I had a chance, I ran away from my home. I ran away and back down with my friends. And the only person I felt in the whole world really cared about me was my mom. And I love my mom very much, and that was something that was in my heart. And so the fifth time I ran away, I went down to see my mom for a couple minutes just to hug her and tell her I love her and make sure somebody loved me. And you know, Alan, I wasn't at that house for 5 minutes. We just had the back doors covered, and they had the front doors covered, and there was men standing on the side of the house. I mean, I don't even know how many people were there. Then they come, my way, I gotta take you to jail. I can't remember the exact words, but that was it. They walk me off to the squad car, and I am right now at the lowest of lows in my life. And I'm in the squad car thinking, how'd they catch me so fast? I didn't get to be with my friends. And it hit me. It was my mom that called the police. Told them I was there.
Yeah, I remember hearing that on your testimony video as well. Why do you think she, well, first of all, do you have like a phone that's on the desk or the computer or something? There's kind of a weird vibrating sound that keeps happening. Or is there anything covering the microphone at all by any chance?
Let me check here. Alan, did that help at all?
Yeah, that helped a little bit. It just sounds a little bit muffled. I can hear you just fine. I was just wondering if maybe there was something there, but it's all good.
Everything looks pretty clean, Alan.
Okay, so, great. No problem. So yeah, I was really curious about that. Why do you think that your mom called the police whenever you came to visit so quickly?
I think she knew more about the world than I did. And I think she made the phone call to protect me, not to get me in trouble. I look back on it now, she knew that she couldn't handle me because I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to be doing the things that I should be doing because of the things that were going on with the schools and the people. I just think it was a terrible situation. And so I look back on it now, my mom did it for my own good because she loved me, not because she hated me.
Gotcha. Okay.
I actually, in my life, I never really talked to her again about it. I love my mom very much, and I just wanted to have it to my mom. And, you know, a kid doesn't really realize what goes on in an adult's life when they lose their mate or they lose a loved one that is a friend or a person who can share the food with their family. A kid doesn't understand that. You understand it when you get older. I certainly didn't understand it. I didn't understand why I was being bullied at school. I didn't understand a lot of things.
Yeah.
It was nice when my grandpa was around because he'd come put his hand on my shoulder and point at that kid and tell him, hey, you leave him alone. And, but I didn't have that. I didn't have a big brother. I didn't have anybody but myself. So, yeah.
Wow. So after that, they take you back to the farm. What happened then?
Well, that day, when I realized my mom had called the police, I got into like a depression that I don't know how to explain it. I wasn't suicidal or anything, but I got to the point where I really didn't care if I lived or not because nobody cared about me. What was my life worth? What was it worth going to a farm every day to milk cows and people you don't care about? What was it worth not being able to have freedom? And you know, facing that was, I remember that night being in the jail cell, and I knelt down on a concrete floor up against a steel bed, and I prayed to a God I didn't know, and I said, God, would you please put somebody in my life that no matter what happens, would never leave me? I don't want to live like this no more, because everybody in the world rejected me. You know, that was just wishful thinking at the time. I remember that night, just uncontrollably crying in my life. But there was nothing I could do about it. And, you know, for 3 days, you wake up every morning, you have coffee and corn flakes, and the coffee tastes like, I can't even tell you. And the whole day you're sitting in jail and you have nothing to do except scratch things on the wall and read magazines. And I remember the third day they're coming to get me. During this period of time, I came up with a whole different plan. I really didn't care how things were going to go in my life. This time I was not going to be in prison. I was not going back to that foster home. I made a plan that when the social worker picked me up to take me home, when we got to the first stop sign, I was going to jump out of the car and take off running. And this time I wasn't going down by my old friends that I was hanging around with. I'm heading to the cities where nobody knows me, and I'm going to go someplace where I'm going to be free and I can do what I want to do. That was my thought. And I was scared to death, but I was going to do it because I didn't care. It was much better than what I was facing. Dying was much better than what I was facing. I was thinking. So that morning, I got up the third morning, and I'm waiting for the walking nightmare to come through that door and tell me, let's go. And I sat down on a table. It was a metal table, like a picnic bench that's in a jail cell. And all the magazines on it, and I'm sitting there. And here's a magazine that I had not seen before. And I opened up this magazine, and it's a hunting magazine. And I'm looking at this magazine, and there's pictures of bears and elk and deer and things in Africa. And man, I wonder, is Africa and Canada and Alaska, are these people really get to do this? And I'm thinking, I'll never be able to do it. But for a little while, I was out of my depression. I had some dreams, and I was looking at this stuff. And just then, you could hear the clank of the metal door coming down. And the door opens up, and there you stand right there. And Ray, come on, let's go. I got to take you back home. You want to talk about those to those walking out that door, following him? But I had a plan, and I'm going to stick to it. I get in the car, and we're driving down the road, and I am looking for the stop sign. And this guy sitting next to me opens up and says, "Ray, I saw you looking at a hunting magazine in there. He said, you like hunting? I'm a tough kid. I ain't supposed to be talking to this guy." And I looked at him and said, "Yeah, I'd like to go hunting sometime." And he said to me, he says, "I'll tell you what. You promise me you don't run away from your foster home again. I'd like to take you hunting with me and my son. And in the meantime, I'm going to find you a better home to live in. I don't even know this guy." He said that to me. And I looked at him and I thought about it, and maybe because I was scared to death, I said to him, I said, "Yeah, I'll make that promise." And I did. It was the first promise I ever made.
Wow.
I actually remember. And I went back to that foster home. I got up every morning milking cows, going to school, smelling like a cow, and coming home milking cows. But I had this dream. I thought, this guy is really going to come. I didn't know if was or not, because most people that ever told me they were going to do something with me never showed up. And I remember my foster mother walking up to me one day, and she said, "Ray, Tom wants to come over on Friday with his sons and pick you up and take you hunting with him. Do you want to go?" I tell you what, I think they could have probably heard me all the way back to where I ran away to. I was so excited, I couldn't believe this is really going to happen. And it was just like all of a sudden I am lifted up. And I don't know how else to explain it. Friday came around. I met Tom's sons. There, a couple of them were about my age. And we took off and went to a cabin out in the middle of nowhere in Black River Falls, Wisconsin. And we were shooting bows and telling hunting stories. And there was a pond out back where we could fish at. And we lit a bonfire and telling stories. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I am free. This is real. And I don't even hardly know these guys, but I'm having the best time of my life. And I remember that night, I said, "Okay, we're going to get up at 4:30 in the morning. We gotta get to bed." And you know, I went to bed with my hunting clothes on. And I don't think I slept a wink that night. I mean, I'm so excited about going in the morning. I can't sleep. And I remember the alarm clock going off at 4:30 in the morning. And all of a sudden, I hear bang, one door opens up to one room, and Tom's standing there, and "Come on, you guys, we got to get going." And one of the other guys gets up, and out the door, Tom goes out back, and the other one goes after him, and his other brother went with him. Come on, Ray, we got to come on. This is tradition. We got to come. I said, what? They went out back, ran off the dock, and jumped into that pond, and it's dark outside. It's cold out. I go out on that dock, and they're splashing around, hooting and hollering. I think these guys are nuts. And come on, Ray, you got to jump in. It's tradition. And I said, well, I jumped in the water, and I want to tell you something. At that point, I became part of that.
Wow.
I mean, it was awesome. And that day we were out hunting and in the woods, out in nature, and seeing things that I could only dream of. And I remember the first white-tailed deer I saw, I had a bow in my hand. I'm going to tell you what, I had buck fever so bad, I don't even remember what happened. I was tripped up. And, you know, that weekend was the most unbelievable weekend of my life to that point. And, you know, here you are, 13, 14 years old. And I experienced something like that. And it's time to go back to the foster home. And I'm riding back to the foster home with Tom. And he says to me, he says, Ray, you're going to be 18 years old soon. And he says, when you turn 18, he says, you get to have your own family. You can make your own money. And you can go hunting. You're an American and you're free. Just hang in there. Well, I'll tell you, when you're 14 years old or so, up to 18 is forever.
But, yeah.
I went hunting with Tom maybe four times during my high school career, but I had a mentor. I had somebody I could talk to. He found me a better home to be in. I actually got to go out for sports, and I had help with them. So this man changed my life. And I knew that when I turned 18 years old, what I wanted to do. And when I did turn 18, it was like somebody let the cat out of the bag. I got married 1 month after I turned 18. I was working two jobs and going to school, and I got to go hunting and fishing. This is real. I paid for my own bow. I paid for my own fishing equipment. I had a car. Man, I'm doing this. And what was really something, Alan, at the age of 19 years old, God blessed me with a little baby, and I named her Danielle. I got to be a dad. I'm going to tell you, anything that ever happened, are you kidding? I mean, I got to be a dad. And I said, man, I'm going to give her everything I didn't have, but most of all, she's going to have a dad. And, you know, I worked really hard. What was interesting, as I was working so hard, by the time I was 23 years old, I now had five children. They're popping out left and right. And I didn't know what was happening. And as hard as I worked, I could hardly keep ends meet. I did harvest a deer with my bow, and I remember the first deer I harvested with my bow, too. I was so uplifted when I got that deer. It was in the wintertime. I put that deer in the back of the car, and I bet I drove around for a week with the deer in the back of that car. I was so proud. Anyway, my grandfather was such an influence in my life because of the man he was. He was in business for himself, and he had a welding shop. And I couldn't make ends meet, no matter how hard I was working. And I thought, well, I can't work for somebody else, make the kind of money I need to make for the family. I can't do any worse on my own. And I don't know where I got this from, or be that kind of boldness, but I did. I quit a perfectly good job, and I went into business myself. And I want you to know, it was the fear of failure that made me succeed. I was not going to not have food on my table. And there was no 40 hours a week. It was whatever it took. And, I think working as hard as I did, it was time that I probably sacrificed for the family that I probably should have been with them more. But I wasn't going to fail. What ended up happening was the business started to grow. And as the kids were getting older and the business was growing, I was able to do more things with them and spend time with them and stuff. But once I got out of school, I tell you what, I started chasing some of the dreams I had when I was a boy. Same dreams that I looked at in that magazine. I wanted to find out if Africa and Canada and Alaska are real. And then I started doing things with the kids. But it seemed like the girls, when they got to a certain age, was more focused on boys and other things. And my son, he got to a certain age, and this is what I like to do, Dad, and some of the things that we were doing. So I started doing some of the things I wanted to do. And I'm going to tell you something. I found out that Canada and Alaska, Africa, they're real. And those things that were in my dreams and my heart, they were there too. And, you know, the other thing that had happened to me, which really helped me in business, at the age of 18 years old, because I was bullied so bad when I was a kid, I started getting into weightlifting. And I actually got into the sport of powerlifting. And I trained with other people, and I trained as a drug-free lifter. And I went to my first tournament when I was 26 years old, I believe. And I thought I was going to do really good at that tournament. I got beat so bad. You know, I tell you, I was so embarrassed. I got beat really bad. But you know what it did? It really drove me. I didn't want to get beat like that no more. I wanted to win. So after about five more years, I'd go to tournaments and I'd win first place once in a while. After about 10 years of it, you win first place quite often, even getting to the point where you're setting records. After about 15 to 20 years of it, you are setting records. And as you're looking in the record book, your name's at the top of the record book, and there's only a couple of guys that can compete with you. And I remember going to a tournament, and it was just to go with some friends of mine, but the right judges were there. And when I was there, I had set a world record in the bench press at that tournament. And it wasn't something that I was trying to do, that I wanted to achieve. It was just something I found that I was competing against myself. And in all things that you do in life, that's really where it comes to. You compete against yourself. You compete against other people. I mean, that's when you compete against yourself. I'll tell you what, that's when you're getting at the top of your game. Well, a few months after I had done that, I got a letter in the mail from the United States Powerlifting Association asking me if I would consider competing for the United States at the Worlds.
Wow.
And I showed that to my wife. I said, Karen, we got to hang this letter on the wall. I never seen anything like this. I mean, I was really honored. I thought, do you think we can do it? And I mean, this is really up there. This is really way past my dreams. And I trained for it. The meet was in Idaho Falls, and I got to the meet, and it was really interesting because all these people from all over the world were there, and they had their interpreters with them. And I'm going to tell you what, you are competing against everybody in the world. And I found that the Russians were the most toughest competitors I'd ever met. Every move I made, they were standing there watching me, writing notes down. And it got a little annoying. But the problem I had was everything was in kilos instead of pounds. And you really had to watch what you did, because the wrong kilo and you might be doing twice the weight that you. So I was blessed that my wife was with me. I didn't have a team of guys that were there from the United States that I knew. Anyway, I was doing my best on the lifts, and I thought I had done pretty well on the lifts. I was trying to watch other people, but there was a weight factor in there too, and how much you weighed compared to how much you did. And I remember sitting down with Karen on the last day. It was a five-day tournament, and I said, Karen, if that Russian goes up for second place, I know we won it. I don't need to get emotional about it, but are you kidding me? A kid from a broken home. And I remember them guys calling from five to second. I'm waiting for them to call my name for second. And they called him, and he went up and got the second place award. And then they called me for first place.
Wow.
This is nuts. It's beyond, I can't talk. I mean, I'm an emotional wreck. I'm going up on a stage to get a trophy that I cannot even begin to believe that I achieved. I grabbed my wife by the hand and I took her up on the stage, and the American anthem was playing, the flag is there, and here I am. My wife is with me.
Wow.
And I gave all the glory to the Lord. And so that too in my life was unbelievable. And I started achieving dreams of the bow in my hand that to me, I didn't think were achievable. And what I found in business and what I found in hunting and also in the powerlifting, it was a dream to break the world record in powerlifting. But once you broke that record, you want to go after another one. And then you want to go after another one. And the same thing with the hunting. And once you achieve that animal, you find the next species that might be a little tougher or a little bigger dream. you go after that one, and then you go after another one. And the same thing with making a lot of money. You think, okay, if I make $1 million, man, I did it. But once you made $1 million, you know what you do? You go after 2 million, and you go after 3 million. And so this is my life. I had three gods at that time, making a lot of money, setting records, and chasing careers. And I was kind of like a free spirit doing what I wanted to do. And I remember walking in the house one day, and I don't remember what I said to Karen, but she said to me, "Ray, I want you to know I came into your life to help save you." And I looked at her, and I just thought, snap, it's, what do you get me? And she said, "I came into your life to help save you." And I knew something about Karen that I didn't understand at the time. She loved the Lord more than she loved me. I was number two in her life. And at that point, I was a little jealous of that. I knew for a fact if I did something upside down, she'd drop me like a bad habit. She'd try to pray for me, but that'd be it. And I mean, this Jesus, I didn't know him. And how could she love him like that? How could she love him more than she loved me? So, yeah, things were going forward. And I went to an event, and one of the guys that was there was Pat Quinn. He was one of the guys I worked with the hunting end of it. When I would go for a certain species of animals, I wouldn't talk to the outfitters. I'd talk to guys that had already been there. And that upped my game by quite a bit, because these guys would tell you, yep, Ray, that's the place to go in your opportunity. And that worked really well. And Pat Quinn was one of the guys that I worked with. Anyway, I went to, I think it was Texas, and there was hundreds of people at this event, and Pat was there. And if you ever saw Pat, this is the interesting thing about it. If you ever saw Pat, you look at him and say, man, that guy's a movie star. He looks like a movie star. I mean, he's, anyway, I introduced Pat to Karen, and I walked away, and I was doing stuff with other people. I kept looking back, and Pat and Karen are talking and talking and talking. I look back over, and they're still talking. And I'm telling you, about 45 minutes went by, and they're still talking. I had no idea what they're talking about. So I'm getting a little swolled up, and I'm turning green. And I'm going to tell you what, this movie star character is falling in love with my wife, and I've had enough of it. Yeah. So I could imagine the look on my face. They were standing there talking. I walked right up to both of them, and I said, what in the world's going on here? And Karen and Pat both looked at me at the same time. They said, we're talking about your salvation. They said the exact same words. I said, what? I said, we're talking about your salvation. I said, you guys are nuts. I shook my head and walked away from them. I said, I don't want to listen to this stuff. And here, I thought this guy was after my wife. I knew how to grab a hold of Pat by the collar and tell her to stay away from my wife. I didn't know how to handle what was just said to me. Anyway, as things are going forward, I think it was the following weekend, I went to church with my wife. I went to church with my wife because she had a beautiful voice and it was family, and it was pretty cool to be with her. And I'm sitting next to her, and guess what day it is? It's Father's Day. And I'm telling you, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, it's Father's Day, and I got cards for my kids, and I get to be a dad. I'm thinking about all the wonderful things, and I'm thinking, man, I wouldn't want to change things. And I started thinking about my dad. And I started realizing there was two sides to every story, and I didn't know the other side. And I never really got to know my dad. But sitting in church that day, I forgave my dad. I forgave him for all the rotten things that happened to me and my brothers and sisters, and how we had to grow up the way we did. But yet, everything was okay. I got a family, and everything was good. And I forgave my dad. And I uncontrollably started crying in church, sitting next to my wife. My wife looked at me and said, this is a big day. I mean, I couldn't believe how much was on my shoulders. And she said, what's the matter today? I forgave my dad, I said. And I walked out of that church. I want to tell you something. I was a different person. I didn't realize how much this was on my shoulders or how much this dark cloud still had a hold of me. Anyway, in my hunting career, I became very accurate with a bow. I never wanted to take a shot at an animal and miss or wound an animal. I wanted to be perfect in my shooting, and I became a perfectionist. And so I was always doing shooting demonstrations, and I had a lot of companies come at me and say, we want you on our pro staff, or we want you as an ambassador to our company. I was just chasing my dreams, and these people are willing to pay me to be a part of what they're doing and help pay me for the hunts and stuff, and this is pretty cool stuff. And anyway, one of the companies was Gander Mountain. And Gander Mountain, they have big events every time they had a grand opening. And one day, one guy called up and says, Ray, what's the chance of having you cut the ribbon with an arrow instead of them cutting with a scissors? I said, yeah, no problem. I said, I'll do that. I want to tell you something, Alan. Something that seemed so simple became an incredible amount of pressure on a guy. When you're standing there and there's 300 to 600 people standing around you, heckling you, and all the things are going on, and you're focused on a ribbon that is maybe an inch wide at 21 yards, you got to make the perfect shot. And I'll tell you, if you miss, you found out what kind of man you are, and you got to grab that second arrow. Oh, my. I got stories for you. It only happened twice, but I never wanted it to happen again. And so I constantly practice with my bow. And I had a ribbon cutting coming up on the weekend that was coming. So I went outside to practice with my bow. And I always practice long range to make me a good short range shooter. And so if you could hit it long range very accurately, when you got in on an animal that you were comfortable at the range, it might be 40 or 50 yards, it was a chip shot to you. Because I was practicing at 100 yards all the time. So for whatever reason this day, I put 5 ribbons on the target. I walked back to the 100 yard marker and I thought, yeah, if I can cut a ribbon at 100 yards, I'll be pretty comfortable at 21. And so I drew back and I took the top of my 100 yard pin and I touched it on the bottom of the top ribbon and I released that arrow and the arrow disappeared through the arrow and whack, it hits the target and the ribbon falls to the side. I cut that ribbon.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And you know what was really interesting? At this point in time in my life, I had a camera guy with me when I was hunting all the time. Anything I did, I had camera people with me because they were using the footage for the things that they needed, and especially with the equipment. I had nobody with me that day. I knocked up the second arrow and I cut the second ribbon. And then I cut the third ribbon. I cut all 5 ribbons in a row. This is humanly impossible to do at 100 yards, the length of a football field. I couldn't believe it. I'm having the best shooting day of my life. And so I walked up to the target, and I'm looking at the target, and the arrows are sitting in the target like this, the ribbon's laying to the side, and I said to myself, this is humanly impossible to do. God had to be guiding these arrows. And for whatever reason, when I had that come into my head, I'm looking at the arrows, I'm looking at the ribbons, and I started thinking about my childhood. I started thinking about all the things that had gone on and it brought me to that point in that moment that I was able to make 5 shots like that. And I thought, gosh, did everything in my life happen and happen for a purpose? And I started thinking about that, and I started thinking about what my wife said, and I started thinking about what Pat Quinn said. And my wife had talked to me about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Could I have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? I'm just a man. And anyway, I started pulling the arrows out. I got to the 5th arrow. And that 5th arrow, when I pulled it out, it hit me hard. God had to be guiding these arrows. He had to be in my life ever since I was a kid. All this has gone on has had to happen for a purpose. And I shook my head and off. I put the ribbons back up. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to shoot 5 more ribbons because this is really cool. And I turned around and I walked back. I got about 50 yards. And I'm thinking about my wife loving the Lord more than she loved me. I'm thinking about a lot of different things that were said to me, a lot of things that happened in my life. I was thinking about when I was a kid, praying to a God who didn't know, and all these things that had come out. There was a lot of things that just in a short period of time I'm thinking about. And that was it, Alan. I went to my knees, and with a bowl in one hand and my arrows in the other, I raised them up, and I said, from now on, Lord, this is no longer my glory, it's yours. And Alan, I knew the truth. And I asked God to forgive me for my sin. And I asked him to guide me and to show me the right path. And I promised him that I would follow him. And you know, just like that, the next few minutes, I had more wisdom come into my head than I've ever had, even to this point.
Wow.
God revealed to me that all the trophies on my wall, the day I died, they're going to be on somebody else's wall, and my name's not even going to be on them. So what did I accomplish there? Nothing but for Ray Hall. All the money I had in the bank, I had people that were fighting over already, and I wasn't even dead yet. I couldn't take it with me, so wow. What did I accomplish there? You know, it's a heavy weight to have a lot of money. It's a lot of responsibility. But I couldn't take it with me. And in a sport that I love so much, in powerlifting, and being that I had the strength of 3 to 5 men naturally in me from working out so hard, I knew that someday somebody was going to break my records. My name wasn't going to be at the top of the record books anymore. So what did I accomplish there? Nothing but for Ray Hall. And then it was just like, okay, Ray, you've only got this much time left on the earth. You don't have time for those distractions. This is what I want you to do. This is what came into my heart. And it was to let every kid know that no matter what their problems are, God's got a purpose for them, and it's not the garbage on the streets. That was the exact words. I got up, and I didn't care about the lifting. I didn't care about the business, and I didn't care about the whacking the animals. Oh, I got to go talk to my wife. And I'm scared to death. I made a second promise. I can't go back on that promise. I cannot go back on the promise. I didn't know what was going to happen. I walked up to Karen. I said, I got to talk to you. I was pretty emotional. I said, I gave my heart to the Lord. I'm not going back to the business the way I did. You can sell it out. I'm not going to whack out all these animals. And I'm not going to be setting records in powerlifting. I said, God's calling me to a ministry. And it starts today.
Wow.
I said, I made a promise. And you know what my wife said? She said, Ray, you do what you think is best, and I'm sticking with you. And I'll tell you what, I had no idea what I was married to up until that point.
Wow.
I didn't know until all the storms started coming in. That day, I lost 95% of my friends. That guy is a wacko. The business, all the things went, nothing went smooth. Nothing did. The storms came in left and right, but there she is, standing right alongside me, a warrior bride. It's incredible the things that went on. She did not take off. She stuck with me. And we started putting on camps. We started, and God put it on my heart how to do the camps. And he told me, he said, that you can't charge $5 or $10 for these kids to come to a camp. Their moms and their grandmas and grandpas can't afford it. I had to figure out ways to raise the funds to put the camps on. And we put on the camps and the things that were going on. It was happening. People were calling him, and I was showing up at different places. Then I was showing up at speaking engagements. There were so many things that went on that were eye-opening. And here we are on the front line. The mission statement for Kicking Bear is to put a bow in a kid's hand and lead their family to the Lord one-on-one. Every camp we had, we'd get there and we would tear it up. There's gunny sack races, and there's rope pulls, and there's marshmallow fights and water fights. We come to those kids' level. We put a bow in their kid's hand. We teach them how to shoot archery, and we teach them how to throw tomahawks and BB guns. Everything you can imagine in the outdoors, God gave us those tools to change those kids' lives. And it works. And what's amazing is after you get done with a marshmallow fight in front of a bomb fight, I don't care if you're 65 years old, you're in that fight. And it goes on for a half hour to 45 minutes. You're beat up good. And we set everybody down in front of that fire, and we let them know that God's only son died for our sins. Wow. And he rose again. We let them know that the garbage that there is going on in their life is not what God's got planned for them. He's got a better plan for them. And I think what happens is, in having so much fun and realizing who are these people that we're having fun with, a lot of people come to a Kicking Bear camp, they read the name Kicking Bear. It has nothing to do with saying about ministry. They come because it's a free camp. And I'm going to tell you what, Alan, to witness what goes on after a salvation home, and we tell everybody there, we have salvation poem cards for you, and we have a Bible for you. And we have a Bible for you. If you want follow up, we're going to get you involved with the right church. You cannot believe it. A wave comes up out of this crowd, like you can, and you cannot hand out the Bibles quick enough. It is unbelievable. You stand there in tears, witnessing the victory in Christ. Now, I'm not good enough to do that, but I am able to come to those kids' level and tell them the truth.
Wow.
And so for 21 years, we've been doing this, and the camps have been growing. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago, we had 122 events throughout the United States, and the average camp was 600 people.
Wow.
The average camp.
600?
Yeah, and you know, you think about this. How can all these people come to a free camp and be fed and be able to receive a gift that is just, I don't know how to explain it, and kind of look at it now like a few loaves of bread and a few fish. It feeds thousands, and they hear the gospel. And,
are these camps? Are these camps over? It's a weekend, right? It's not like it's not a full week, or
they're a 2 day camp.
Wow!
And we just did a couple of them here in the last few years, especially with this COVID virus thing going on. It was almost like everything we were doing is in evangelism was set on the back burner. I was not comfortable with that. This is not my calling. I got to figure out how to do this. And I'm working with my leadership team throughout the United States. Guys, how are we going to do this? And I went to the Gunnarsson Clinic here in the La Crosse area, and I talked to Sig Gunnarsson. It's interesting how all this worked out. It shouldn't have ever happened. I said, man, we put on this camp every year, and there's about 700 people come to this camp. This year, we can't have a camp. How can we do this that we can have a camp? And so he writes all these things that we had to comply with. He said, if you can do this, we can have the camp, and I'm good with it. I said, really? I got a hold of my leadership team. I said, hey, the head of Gunnarsson Clinic said we could do this camp, and this is what we got to do. What do you think? Everybody but one agreed with me. And he said, great. He said, if I go to that camp, he said, I'll probably lose my job because we're around so many people. I said, well, I understand. If you can't be there, that's okay. And but we put that camp on. And I'm going to tell you something. It was amazing. I think all these people that have been locked up and cooped up, and I've gotten letters from the sheriff's department telling me about the suicides and the drug involvement and all the things that are going on because kids are trapped at home and they can't get out of the house and they can't do this and do that. The devil's got a grip on them and he's turning these kids into puppets and doing what he wants with them. That devil's a pipsqueak. And I'll tell you, when we put on this camp, it was like somebody let the cat out of the bag here. I'll tell you, everybody was hooting and hollering. We had more fun. And what was amazing, we planned on having fireworks. The camp was from 4 o'clock in the afternoon till 10 o'clock. This is one of the shortest camps we've ever had. And at 10 o'clock at night, everybody had to go home. We actually had to watch out how we fed people and all that stuff because of the virus. But everything went pretty good. So at the end of the night, we started the bonfire and started this big old marshmallow fight. It went nuts. And everybody's all beat up, and we set them down on the grass. And I had Pastor Billy get up, and he's a youth pastor, and he shared his testimony. Billy grew up pretty close the same way I did, with the same troubles. And now he's a youth pastor.
Wow.
He gets up and shares this testimony. You could hear a pin drop. With that many people, you could hear a pin drop. And then we had a salvation prayer, and again, the hands came up for the Bibles and the salvation poem card. And in the midst of all this, they're ready to start the fireworks because we got to be done by 10 o'clock. And I said, give us a minute more. Just give us a minute more. And I yelled out to the crowd, does anybody here want to get baptized tonight?
Wow.
We had a stock tank that was sitting on a trailer full of water. And Chad said, yeah, I'll pull that right up in front of the fire. Said, yeah, okay, all right. Anybody want to get baptized tonight? I didn't know if anybody would come up. The first young man walks up. And I had another pastor who was there, Pastor Kevin. I said, would you interview that young man? And he did, and he interviewed his folks, brought him right up on the stock tank, and he got in the stock tank, and just then, the first set of fireworks started going off. We're baptizing these kids and people in front of this giant bonfire. The bonfire is as big as a one-story building. and the fireworks are going off in the top of their head. And I'm standing there, I cannot even begin to believe what I'm witnessing, because we are at war. And here's the description. We're standing in front of a fire that is, that could be an eternal fire. But men of God are standing in front of that fire, sharing the gospel. And instead of these people going into that fire eternally, they are into the kingdom of heaven. And you know, that hit me pretty hard. And the truth of it is, it's not easy being a disciple. It's not easy getting everything coordinated. And then there's things like this virus going on. But yet there were so many decisions for Christ that night, and all the baptisms that went on. Man, it was unbelievable to witness what God did. I was a part of it. It was pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to next year and what we're doing. And then the other thing that had happened because of what Tom did when I was a kid, he took me hunting. He put dreams in my heart. And we let these kids know, keep following your dreams. Don't let the devil get involved there. God's got a purpose for you, and that purpose is for good. It's not the garbage on the street. And what we do is we put on group fishing trips, and we put on group hunting trips for these kids. That is at no cost for them. And Chad, who is our mutual friend, he just took a kid bear hunting the other day. I think Gary is 12 years old, and Gary harvested a bear.
I saw that picture. I couldn't, that was what initiated all of this. Cause I saw the picture that Chad posted, and he just mentioned God is doing a lot of things with this ministry, Kicking Bear. And I thought, I've never heard anything like this before. So I wrote him, and he told me about the ministry. And it's amazing the amount that you're doing, the thousands of kids that you're reaching. I had never even heard of this ministry. I didn't even know there were ministries that were based around hunt. I've never been hunting in my entire life. I've always wanted to go. I've never been. I never grew up around anyone who went hunting. And so I'd never heard of this before. And I was just, it's just amazing to me that that 12-year-old boy harvested a bear. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you take a kid like that who's got troubles in his life, introduce him to a spiritual leader like Chad. They're out there hunting together. He's sharing the gospel with them with every move he makes and everything he does. And then this critter comes in, and he harvests this critter. And you know what ends up happening? This kid is put up on cloud 9, and then he's got meat for his family for a whole year.
Wow.
Meat that family couldn't afford to him. God provided that.
Wow.
And you know, so Gary now is going to be, he's going to be going turkey hunting with us, and he has been turkey hunting, and he's going to be going deer hunting, and we're going to stay involved with him. There's been more decisions for Christ in a turkey blind than anything. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you get men of God and women who love the Lord out there with these kids and get them on the right path. Some of them you can lead in the water, and you can't make them drink. That's in God's timing. But the ones that want it, just like when I was a kid, they're ready for it. I'll tell you what, you put the right people in their path. So for 21 years, we've been doing what we're doing. You know how many kids have grown up and got their own families and are now coming back to Kicking Bear to help out?
Wow.
I saw it full circle. I mean, the first time I saw it full circle, I stood there crying. They must have thought I was crazy. Five young men walked up to me, and I got to this Kicking Bear event where we're having it, and they walked up and they're standing in front of me. I thought I was going to get pummeled. And they're looking at us, what's going on, guys? And then one guy said, do you remember us? And I'm looking at him, I said, well, you kind of look familiar. Each one of them said, well, I was at the Kicking Bear camp, and they're telling different things that went on at the camp and stuff. And then they said, we came here today to help. What would you like us to do, Ray?
Wow.
And I'm going to tell you what, that was a wow for me. So the interesting thing about chasing your dreams, I'll kind of leave you with this here, because this is the truth. Alan, right to the core. God has given us, each and every one of us, special gifts. He has made each and every one of us perfect to do His will, no matter how you are or where you are or what is going on. And so for me, as a young man, I got a bow in my hand, and I loved it. I loved the flight of the arrow. I wanted to achieve my dreams with a bow in my hand. And I worked at it, and I worked at it. And I got to the point where I got so accurate with the bow, I was always doing shooting demonstrations or ribbon cutting. Matter of fact, after I'd given my heart to the Lord, they asked me to do a men's conference in Florida with all these Baptist churches. They wanted me to set a world distance record with my boat. And so I went out there, and on my very first practice shot, my wife was standing next to me. It was 310 yards. I had two flags, one in the middle and one at the target, and both flags are going the opposite way. The wind is the biggest variable. Which way is it going to blow the arrow? And anyway, I told Kenneth, well, all these people are getting a little restless. I got to take a shot. I got to rely on God. I drew back, and I aimed where I would aim. I released that arrow. It disappeared at about 200 yards in the air, and I'm sitting there thinking that I for sure missed. I heard whack. I looked at Kara and said, what was that? And all these people were standing around besides me. All of a sudden, the phone goes off. The guy standing next to me and said, he bullseyed the target.
What?
And I said, what? He's got a bullseye. And these people down on that end down there are hooting and hollering and yelling. I walked right off that podium, walked up the target, and no kidding, Alan, that arrow is dead center in a bullseye from 310 yards.
Oh, my goodness.
Possible to do. And you know what the message was that weekend? The pastor got up and gave a message on missing the mark. He gave a message on sin. And that was the message. And what was interesting out of this whole thing, there was 400 men at this conference. 39 men made a decision for Christ that weekend. So God was using my bow, and I thought, man, oh, man. So one day I was in Bible study with my wife, and in Bible study with her, I started reading about the staff of Moses. And anybody that saw that staff that had a human view on things would say, yep, if I had that staff, I'd be rich and famous. And they probably would be. And, you know, Moses did incredible things with that staff. And I wanted to find out what happened to his staff after he died. I found that Aaron's staff went into the Ark of the Covenant. I could not find out anything on Moses' staff. And as I was studying, trying to figure this out, I got to Gideon. And Gideon was being called. And Gideon didn't know if God was real. So he made an offering. And he's standing there. An angel shows up, takes his staff, touches that offering, and burns it up. Gideon knows God is real. And what God did in Gideon's life with the battles that went on, humanly impossible to do. And so I'm thinking about this. And probably about 2 months went by. I kind of gave up on trying to figure out where Moses' staff is at. I'm sitting in my office. And Pastor Mark Clements comes walking through the door. Mark likes to hunt and fish. He's a great guy. And you want to talk about a man of the word. I'll tell you what, he's a warrior. Walks in, sits down in a chair over there, and leans back. Great. He says, you got to get out and do more shooting demonstrations. God put that staff in your hand for a purpose, and it's to change men's lives. And I said, what did you say? Your bow. He says, that's your staff. He said, you changed men's lives with that. Wow. He had no idea what I had been studying on. And I broke down crying. Are you kidding me? All this time, God put this in my hand to do what I do? The mission statement for Kicking Bear is to put a bow in a kid's hand and bring your family to the Lord one-on-one. Why did God wait that long to reveal that to me? So what I'm saying to you, Alan, each and every one of us have a staff. It's a special gift that God has given us to do his will. And once we realize that, the miracles that you'll witness is amazing. I often wonder how I could cut five ribbons at a row at the distance I did. And I often wonder how I could hit targets the way I did. And I didn't feel that I was anything special. I know exactly how now. God had a purpose in me.
Wow.
So now when I go hunting to relax, I look at my bow at a whole different way. Holy smokes. Anyway, that's the truth of things. There are so many things that I have witnessed. But I think the thing that has been revealed to me the most, that in the hardships and the troubles, had I not gone through those things when I was a kid, and all the things that had gone on until the day I gave my heart to the Lord, had I not gone through those things, I would have not known what it was like to be wounded, to be hurt, to be beat up by the enemy, to have the scars on me that I got. But once I knew how to fight the battle, once God was at the helm of what I was doing, I'll tell you what, I have been bold, and I've been reckless, and I've been fearless in what my calling is. And I'm out there looking for equally yoked men and women who want to get on the front line of the battle and take this pattern that we've got, that God has given to me, and use it for His glory. These different people say, Ray, this is your legacy. I don't even want to care if I want to hear Ray Hall's name in any of it. This is Jesus Christ, not Ray Hall.
Amen.
This is His ministry, not mine. And you know, what's kind of interesting too, when you walk away from them earthly things that you do, okay, how am I going to keep up with the Joneses? How am I going to keep my house? How am I going to keep this? How am I going to keep doing that? And I want to tell you something right now. God has provided just enough each year to get by that I've had food on my table. On the other hand, He's given me a gift in a marriage that I can't even thank Him enough for. When I was 14 years old, 13, 14, in jail, kneeling down, asking God to put somebody in my life that would never leave me, if I would have known He had Karen planned for me, I would have been the happiest kid in the world. I hold her hand, and every time I hold her hand, He reminds me of the gift that He has given me in my marriage. And I'll tell you something, this ring right here, this isn't a wedding band. It's a symbol of a gift that God gave me.
Amen.
So there's so many truths after you give your heart to the Lord and start studying the scriptures. You draw the line. It's your personal relationship with Jesus Christ. What everybody else does who says they give their heart to the Lord, or what they're doing or what they don't do, that's up to them with their relationship. But what you do is what you'll answer for when you go home. I hear it a lot. Although everybody, these Christians are nothing but hypocrites. They do this or they do that. You know, we're all sinful. And we all got things that go on and some things we can't bear.
Yeah.
We stay focused on the scriptures. And we got men, for me, men like Chad, he's a piece of iron. If I got troubles in my life, I'm going to call Chad. Hey, Chad, I got to talk to you about this. I need some iron to sharpen some iron. And you know, the devil, he really does. He's got all kinds of things he's going to throw at you. And sometimes he throws just the right thing. And it distracts you and turns your head sideways. And yeah. You need other men of God to step up to help you.
Yeah, you do. I was just talking to somebody else about that as well. The importance of having counsel around you, people around you who, that iron that sharpens iron. It's one thing to just, you don't want yes men around you. You want people who will just tell you the truth like it is. That's actually really, really hard to find.
Yes, it is. I think Paul wrote about it. 1 in 1,000 men are virtuous.
Yeah.
In fact, some of the writings of Paul are so eye-opening to be involved with God's ministry that it has helped me so much. When he talks about other believers, he gets to the point where I'd rather be working with non-believers than believers. I mean, different things that he has said, and then he talks about himself, but the things I do want to do, I don't do, and the things I want to do, I don't do. And you know, you realize how human that man that loved the Lord was, and all the things that went on with him. Even how we structure the ministry at Kicking Bear is very much the same structure that he had with planting churches. When we go to a town to put a Kicking Bear event on, we reach out to the churches and the ministries with the right doctrine, and we say, hey, we're putting this event on, and this is our purpose, and we're going to share the gospel. We'd like to have some help from you for follow-up. And then we get a team of people together. We teach them how to do it in the first year. We help them be equipped in the second year. The third year, we're there to witness and watch what they do, but they're on their own the fourth year complete. And we're off doing another one. And, so everything in the Bible is 100% true.
Amen.
And how human I am is 100% in the Bible. And I learned from it. I don't know. So, yeah.
Wow. I do have one more question. I'm just out of curiosity. I saw the picture on your website of you with that grizzly bear that you harvested, and it said that that's where the name Kicking Bear came from. What does that mean? Can you explain that?
Yeah. So in chasing my dreams of the bowl, one of the dreams I had was to harvest a grizzly bear with my bowl. And the thoughts that go through your mind as you're practicing and getting ready to go on a hunt like that, am I going to be man enough to make the right shot? Am I going to freeze up when this giant animal is in front of me? Or it's an animal that can turn on you and kill you in a heartbeat. You know, those kind of thoughts are in your mind. And I practiced and practiced and practiced. And so when I got to Unalakleet, Alaska, we fly into this area, and man, these big bears are here. And there's fish everywhere. The streams and the rivers, they're just filled with these salmon. And the smell from the dead fish that these bear are pulling out of the waters, it is just, you cannot believe the smell. It's unbelievable. And then you see these tracks. And I mean, these giant tracks in the mud and the dirt. You think, what am I doing here with a bull? You know, anyway, one evening I set up about 18 yards off of a riverbank, and I'm sitting there, and I could hear all this splashing and splashing. I thought, man, is that a bear jumping in the water after fish? And it's just, I never heard anything like that. And I looked over into the brush to the right of me where the splashing was coming, and here's this big hump in the brush. And I thought, man, that kind of looks like the hump on a bear's back. And I no more than thought that thing moved and it was coming toward me. And all of a sudden, here we are. It's real. It's a giant bear. The head is a monstrous bear, and it's walking in front of me. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is what you're after. And I thought, okay, you got to let the bear walk past you so he doesn't know where the arrow came from, so he can come back and get you.
Right.
That was my plan. I was going to let him walk by just a little bit so I could quarter the shot up into him and make a perfect shot. And that's what happened. The bear got in front of me, got just past me, and the bear turned like he was going to go in the river. Then he turned back, and he stood on the bank looking the other way, and I drew back, and I came up his leg line, and I released the arrow, and I made a perfect shot on the bear. The bear flipped in the air, landed in the water, came out of the water, and ran right at me. My worst nightmare. Bear is coming. And I told myself, don't move. He doesn't know where the arrow comes from. Everything goes in slow motion. And the bear's running right at me, and all of a sudden, right alongside me, he falls and collapses and lays on his back, and he's gurgling, and he expired that quick. On the film, I had a video camera hooked into a tree behind me that I turned the switch on. I got it all on film. But it was from the time the arrow went through the bear and he was gurgling next to me was 11 seconds.
Wow.
It was that quick. So the next day, I'm sitting around the campfire, and Ron Shearer is there. Ron Shearer is a character. This guy is an outdoors, somebody you read about in the book. Anyway, we're sitting around the campfire, and he says, Ray, he says, I hunt mountain lions in the off season, and my Indian name is Man Walking in Cat Trap. He says, you kicked that bear's hind end, so I'm going to call you Kicking Bear.
Oh, wow.
You like the fish so much, he says, your full name is going to be Kicking Bear Fish. I looked at him and said, man, this guy is nuts. And I never heard anything like that. But the more I got to know Ron during the time I was out there, the more respect I had for him. And I came home and I told my wife, I said, Karen, I got to tell you this story. I said, you won't believe what this guy called me. And Karen was talking about it. She said, well, Ray, let's use it for some of your email stuff and stuff. I said, okay. Anyway, you would not believe the doors that name opened up.
Really?
And I remember that the night that God gave me the vision on how to do Kicking Bear camps the way we do it, I went up there and I could see it just as clear could be. And I came home and I talked to my wife. I said, Karen, this is how we got to do it. And I said, the only problem I got is I don't know what to name the camp. She didn't bat an eye. She says to me, well, let's call it Kicking Bear. That's how it got its name.
That's a great name. I love that. That's such a great story. Ray, thank you so much for taking the time to just share your testimony. I loved it because you actually shared a lot more detail even than in the video on your website, which you didn't mention the power lifting on there or how the camp got its name. So I really Man, I have so much respect for what you do, especially now, just because 2 weekends ago, our ministry, we held our first missions camp for teens. Whoa. And we had 14 kids come. And for me, it was so big because I'd never done anything like that before. We took very similar to what you do. Of course, it's not hunting focused, but we took them out into the woods and everyone slept in tents and we had the bonfire. Yeah. I wish I'd known about the marshmallow fight. I would have done that. I hadn't thought about that. I'm going to do that next time. But yeah, I have so much respect for what you do. And I know just as a missionary myself, that statistically the vast majority of people who go into ministry have some kind of encounter with the Lord between the ages of 4 and 14. And so that age group that you minister to, they're often the most overlooked in churches, the least funded, but they are really statistically, they're the most important because they are the ones who, that's the age, that's the when, they actually call it the 4-14 window. That's the window when they really come to the Lord and they get solidified in their faith. Wow. So I just have a lot of respect for what you do.
Well, all I can tell you, Alan, is the Lord did it. I get to be a part of it. And I made my second promise. And in that second promise, which was interesting, I'll leave you with that thought because it's the truth. Tom Pulte said to me, you promised me you don't run away from your foster home. I'm going to take you hunting and fishing. And I'm going to find you a better place to live. I will tell you, in my second promise to the Lord, He's promised me a better home. And in the meantime, I'm hunting for men. Mm. And I've got great joy in that. I actually have the joy of a five-year-old kid in my heart again. There's nothing easy about what I do. But you know something? What He's planned for me when I go home, and I want to take as many of my brothers and sisters as I can when I go. I want them to know the joy of Jesus instead of the hurt and the wounds that the devil put in. People think that this life here and how they're living is normal. It's not normal.
Yeah.
And we got to get out. But yeah, I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you do. And you know, if in your area we decide to put a kicking bear camp on, all you know the guy to call.
You know what? I'm not a hunter. I would love to learn, but almost everybody in the churches that I'm part of here, they are so, I bet you anything, they would love to have a camp like that here. So I'll have to talk to the pastor that I work with here, Pastor Mark, and just mention it to him and see, cause that would be amazing. Even I would love to just go and learn how to shoot a bow. And I know I'm not a kid, but I'd still love to just go watch and just see. And that would be amazing.
Yeah. The amazing thing about shooting a bow is that when you focus on something to hit a spot like that, you know, and you're releasing the arrow to do that, it actually is a very relaxing way to get away from the stress of the world. Hmm. And to focus on something that's enjoyable. You know, there's a lot of outdoor things we can do. It's just that was the staff that God gave me. And I know about that staff. And now I've seen miracles with the staff that He gave me. Amen. It doesn't necessarily mean that we got to have hunts or fishing trips after those things, but those are just the tools that we got, and it works. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Ray. I really appreciate it.
All right.
And God bless. I know you're doing your Wounded Warriors camp this coming week. I'll just be praying for you. That's also so powerful. And so thank you so much. Have a great afternoon and a great week. And thank you for your time.
Take care. Wonderful talking to you. Anytime you want to do something again, you holler at me.
I would love to.
We can get into the Wounded Warrior camps and some of the things that go on there that is so eye-opening with these anointed men and women. These sheepdogs that watch over the flocks here, the stories and the things I've witnessed God do in these men and women's lives after they've been wounded and hurt so bad, it's pretty amazing. So anytime you want to get together again, you holler.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do this again. I would love to hear about that.
All right. You take care. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.